Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today is San Francisco Chronicle columnist and reporter Vanessa Hua. For two decades, she's been writing about Asia and the immigrant diaspora in journalism and in fiction. She's the author of a short story collection and a new novel, her first, A River of Stars. In it, she tells the story of Scarlett Chin, a young expectant mother from South China, sent to the U.S. by her lover and employer to give birth to what they hope is a boy in a Southern California maternity tourism center, which will give their child a huge advantage, U.S. citizenship. But it soon becomes apparent that once the child is born, Scarlett no longer will be needed by the boss or even welcome back to China. So she goes on the run with another pregnant stowaway. They make their way to San Francisco's Chinatown to disappear and, like other immigrants, to find their own American dream. What she doesn't know, that Boss Jung is not far behind. A River of Stars examines the new China and today's questions about immigration, citizenship by birth, and gender from a very different perspective and tells us an interesting story as well. A River of Stars is published by Ballantine, and Vanessa Hua is my guest today. Vanessa Hua, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
I have to ask, in a recent column in the San Francisco Chronicle, you wrote that you compared writing your novel to mining for gold, moving tons of rock to find a small little bit of gold. Was it really that difficult in writing this novel?
Yeah, I mean, I began writing it about 9 months after giving birth to my sons. So in some ways, much like panning for gold, it's also like learning how to walk again. You know, you at first you're so sleep exhausted that you can barely string together a sentence, let alone a paragraph. You know, in terms of writing a long project, you know, there's all these dead ends, wrong turns, pages you throw away, subplots that disappear, until finally the book emerges. And, you know, every time I walk through a bookstore, I just marvel at everything on the shelves, because every book really does feel like a miracle in terms of all the effort that went into it, the luck that made it possible for it to get picked up and then distributed. It just feels like a miracle.
Now, as a journalist, you're writing every day. What's different about a novel? And I know you've written short stories. What made you decide this story was a novel?
You know, actually, this story, A River of Stars, began as a short story. I think not that novels are long short stories, not at all. But I think it's difficult for me to sit down and say, today I'll start a 300-page project. I'm able to sort of wrap my head around a 15 or 16-page story more easily than sort of like planting my flag on the hill and saying, you know, this is what I'm going to charge up to. But in terms of the difference between daily journalism and, you know, a novel, for me, journalism, you know, I love sort of how you can, you know, it's the first draft of history and how you're writing something that will appear, you know, the next day or, you know, sometime later that week. And there's like a wonderful engagement with the readers, especially since I'm a columnist. I know that I come to them over their kitchen table and we, you know, form a relationship over time. And if I, you know, at public events, people will say, like, I love hearing about your kids, or, you know, they ask about how things are going in my life. Whereas a novel is ultimately a marathon, and I'm alone in my head, you know, for periods of years, and there's not always a guarantee that it will get published. And so for me, it's this great mix of being out in the world and also, you know, being, I think both journalism and fiction nourish my creative practice, because with both, I'm really following my curiosity out into the world and trying to shine a light onto those untold stories.
Now, I haven't read your short story collection, but what I was struck by as having read some of your journalism and a good portion of A River of Stars is there's some similarity, but it's a very different writing style when you're writing fiction, it seems to me.
Oh, as opposed to when I'm writing...
Yeah, you're a journalist, yeah.
Yes, yeah. I mean, and people have asked me about that, like, what do I see the difference being? And I think with journalism, there's a directness to it. You have to, you know, while every word in each form, you know, has to have a reason for being there, otherwise it gets cut. I think you have to get the news out. You have to explain what's the point more quickly. Whereas with fiction, certainly in a short story and definitely in a novel, there's a capaciousness. Like, you can take your time to sort of, you know, there's a difference between summary and scene. Like, you can summarize something much more quickly, say, for journalism, but if you build out a scene, it takes more time And hopefully it will also last longer in a reader's imagination.
Well, what was the inspiration for A River of Stars? Did it come out of your reporting at some point? There's some big issues that are a part of this novel. Where did the story begin?
Well, I'm the daughter of Chinese immigrants, American-born, and I grew up in the Bay Area. So I, was always aware of how the world was different, inside the home versus outside of it. And I think that gave me an observer's eyes, which has fueled my journalism and my fiction. But the specific impetus for my novel began when I was pregnant with my twin sons and living in Southern California. And I began hearing about these maternity hotels. That is, it was these suburban homes east of downtown Los Angeles where pregnant Chinese women were coming and going, and the neighbors were baffled, and it sounded like a brothel in reverse. It turned out that they were coming here, about a month before their due date, and the plan was to give birth, so their children would get U.S. citizenship, and then they would return back to China. And for me, being pregnant is one of the most vulnerable times in a woman's life, and I wondered what it was like to live so far from friends and family while pregnant, and also, what was it about U.S. citizenship that was so prestigious or attractive that women would go to such lengths to do this? And so that, I read everything I could about it, and I looked up court documents, and off I went. That's how the novel began.
So you decided to pursue it from a literary view as opposed to a journalistic view, or did you start with a journalistic piece?
At the time, I had just finished my Master's of Fine Arts in creative writing, and so I was more focused on fiction. Definitely I have taken things with a journalistic approach and then continued on, with an eye towards fiction. But I think for me, fiction flourishes where the official record ends. And so none of these women were really talking, once some of these houses got, busted for code violations for stuffing too many people in, a house. And so that seemed like a valuable place for me to tell this story because when you're pregnant, like I was with twins, you're hugely pregnant. People quickly can see and, they offer you, the front of the line or offer up their seat, and they're very generous and kind to you. But I wondered what it was like, what the dynamic would be like with a dozen pregnant women who would get the good wishes, who would get to be the queen bee, and it seemed like a situation that was ripe for drama, but also ripe for comedy.
Yeah. Well, so I assume the only way you could learn about these secret maternity centers was in just seeing court documents when they were busted because nobody was talking about it, right?
Exactly. And also, I looked at the websites. You could see advertising the services. You could see, standard accommodations, VIP accommodations. It's like a completely fascinating underground industry yet is out in the open.
Tell us a little bit about your protagonist, Scarlett Chen. She is a worker in, I assume, a factory in China, and she's gotten pregnant by the boss, right?
Yes, exactly. And so she is inspired by my reporting in China when I went back to the Pearl River Delta, which is in Guangdong Province, east of Hong Kong. And it's that whole province is sort of like factory floor to the world. And people from all over China will come here to find work in the factories. And there are these special economic zones that sort of opened up to foreign investment into the world. And I just have been so fascinated at, meeting these young girls, some leaving as teenagers or, taking train rides for 20 hours, seeking independence. The work is incredibly hard. The hours are insane. And, they're working 6 or 7 days a week. And yet there is a sort of freedom that they're trying to carve out for themselves to create a life that's different than the one that's been handed down to them. And so Scarlett, she left home as a teenager. She's kind of made her way, trying to self-improve, jumping from job to job. She has carved this life out for herself, but then she falls in love. But when her married lover, her boss, the sonogram seems to indicate the child is a boy, and because of this traditional preference in the culture for boys, he decides, he convinces her, you should go to America so our son can have this advantage. She's a feisty woman, independent, but yet had her guard up all her life. And I think in coming to a new country, in having a child, this novel is also about her finding a makeshift family and finding a community in San Francisco's Chinatown.
So she comes to the United States. She comes to California to one of these, I guess they're called maternity
hotels.
Yeah, tourism centers. It's like the boss of the center will basically hold passports. They're basically prisoners in a way, right?
Like one of the news stories I read, a neighbor said a pregnant Chinese woman showed up on her doorstep saying that she was hungry. And so he took her to McDonald's, but then he took her right back. So it just, that incident, that moment, that real life incident just made me think, like, these women must be miserable. And yet also feeling like trapped, like they came here to do something and, you know, what can they do? And, you know, and that really, think about it, what kind of character might feel like would end up in this situation, and how would she sort of make her way out of it?
Now, the gender of the child plays a big role, because Scarlett's baby is, they think he is a male. I'm giving a little away there, but it doesn't really give away much of the novel. Because they think the baby is a male, Boss Jung sends her to America to give birth so that his son will have all the benefits of U.S. citizenship. How important is that in Chinese culture today? You know, the one-child policy has been relaxed, but is that still a big issue?
I mean, I still think there is a preference for boys. I mean, the whole one-child policy does play, is an important backdrop to the novel, in that Scarlett is an only child herself, and her widowed mother ends up having to work in a family planning clinic. And, you know, as a child, Scarlett is witness to some horrific things. And that's part of the reason why she leaves home and why she feels like she can't go back, because the novel is set while the policy is still in force. And I mean, China still, even though the policy is relaxed, frowns upon single mothers and is really, the country's sort of in a demographic time bomb, because they have this aging population and, you know, falling birth rate, not just because of the policy, but because, you know, China has, as all countries begin to develop, then the birth rate begins to fall as well, because women get educated, have kids later, go into the workforce. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to see how this policy has shaped a generation of women and families, and in terms of determining their reproductive choices, and sort of comparing that to what sort of freedoms they hope to find in the U.S.
And so even though Boss Jung, this is his lover, not his family, the idea is that a boy is something worthy of support.
Of inheriting the business.
Yeah, and adopting into the family, which Scarlett is not in on at the beginning of the novel, right?
Right. She feels she has to escape because, you know, he betrays her and essentially wants to cut her out of the picture. And, you know, they've grown distant all along while she's been at the maternity hotel, and this is just further proof. But then there's another sonogram, and it reveals something that makes her also worry about what action she needs to take. And so, yeah, I mean, with this novel, it reflects a lot about, you know, women's roles and their search for independence and who, you know, the clash of sort of tradition and modernity.
My guest today is Vanessa Hua. She's a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle. She's the author of the previous short story collection, Deceit and Other Possibilities, and her first novel is out, A River of Stars. It's published by Ballantine Books. She's our guest today on Studio Tulsa. Once she gets the results of that sonogram, and the boy is not forthcoming, she Angie's been told that basically she'll be cut out of the family, she goes on the run. And she finds another teenage stowaway from the maternity center, and they go to Chinatown. And there they sort of disappear into Chinatown. How common is that story today? Is it still possible to disappear like that?
Well, the thing that I've always found so fascinating about Chinatown in San Francisco, it's the oldest in the country, and so there's a wonderful sense of history. You know, tourists come there and, you know, snap photos, go get dim sum. yet it's there, and you sense a real vitality in the neighborhood just because of newcomers who are still arriving. It's a place where you might find a job, a place to live, you know, and find your footing in this country before moving on. But yet, you know, so much of what outsiders see is just on the street level, on the ground floor, all those shops, the retail establishments. But if you look up, you see clothes hanging in the window to dry, and you realize that people are living here. And as a reporter, I've had an opportunity to, go upstairs and see what it's like. And it feels like a, a whole different world than sort of the glittering high-rises that are going up all over San Francisco now. Often the neighborhood is very densely populated. The rooms above the retail shops are, there's common kitchen, common bathroom. The rooms are so small, but whole families are jammed in. And people will keep the doors open because, and the kids will walk around and, play. And, there's a small town sense of community that is sort of absent. This is what the visitors to Chinatown don't see, the ones who come right in just for a meal or for, to sightsee.
There's definitely a wall between outsiders and insiders. Did you feel like you were able to totally penetrate that wall, even as a second-generation Chinese here in this country? Do you think that wall was erased for you when you visited in there?
Yeah, definitely I love Chinatown, but I'm not a native to it. But I was fortunate as a reporter to have community guides who sort of made introductions and sort of, helped me gain entry to these places where I could, do interviews. And I think, the reason why I was even trusted to do that was because I was not just parachuting in to find some sensational story and then never showing my face in there again. I think as a beat reporter, you really build trust and relationships by going, there repeatedly. They know you're not going to disappear on them. And it doesn't mean you're only writing sunny stories, not at all. I wrote a huge investigative piece or series that, led to this Chinese American fundraiser and being put in jail and the Secretary of State resigning. But I think that they were glad for that because, the feedback I got was like, please, all people ever want is for their story to be told fairly and to, to show all facets of it and not just to reduce them to stereotype or statistic. And you can do that in fiction, you can do that in journalism by sort of showing the whole person or the whole community.
What made you want to write about that particular culture? What is it that you wanted to share with a larger audience about this culture, which is largely hidden from view?
Yeah, or in a sense, like hidden in plain sight, because I think often in this country, Asian Americans are seen as perpetual foreigners, like go back to your own country, sort of hurled at us no matter how many generations we've been here, even if we've been here longer than the state was even in existence. And, there's often also, there's immigration debates in this country, and the whole narrative is centered on people coming over on foot at the southern border, and, like the Fushin, the talk of the wall really does not address sort of like the complexity of how people immigrate, their histories. So many people are actually just coming over on valid visas, much like my character. It's not someone sneaking in the dark of night. And so really thinking about immigration to this country is going to take more than simplistic solutions. But I think the larger thing is just that I hope that readers might feel sort of like invited and excited to explore this vibrant new world and want to share that experience with others, because I really do think literature does have this power to foster empathy, to really put us in the hearts and minds and ambitions and dreams of someone else. And, in that way, sort of help us build an understanding for my main character or even the other, Daisy or the other minor characters in the book, because they all represent the diversity within the Chinese community. We are not a monolith. We do not all think alike. Our contributions to this country are all different.
One of the things I found interesting is, there is controversy over anchor babies now, and it is, as you mentioned, mainly about immigrants coming over from the South, not from the East or from Asia. And you tell this story from a completely different perspective.
Yeah, I think that's really important to emphasize that immigration covers a huge range of experiences. Like, I've recently talked to several people who were Irish immigrants who were undocumented for a time. And yet they're sort of like left out of the debate, just that, that immigration is coming from these different countries and, situations are different and, only certain communities or ethnicities get demonized.
I had to actually look up anchor babies just to make sure I was right. And this is the idea that people come over to have a child on U.S. soil to get citizenship rights. And then hopefully at some point later, more family members can join the citizen. That's it in a nutshell, right?
Right. And I mean, with this trend of maternity hotels, it's not quite, the baby does indeed have U.S. citizenship, but often the families are just going back because they have enough means. But in a sense, it's like an insurance policy.
Right.
Like in case, as rapid as the economic growth is in China, you know, the skies are polluted and, you know, who knows what the future holds under the authoritarian government. So they, I think these mothers see it as an advantage, and, you know, much like sending their kids abroad for college, you know, something along those lines. And so, but just the whole question of anchor babies and the 14th Amendment and birthright citizenship, I really do think, you know, what's unusual should not define, it makes for great fiction, but should not define immigration policy. You know, the vast majority of people who are you know, born here are not, you know, trying to pull some scheme.
And exploit in fact, the system. Yeah.
Right, right. And in fact, you know, I'm the American-born daughter of Chinese immigrants. You know, my parents are both naturalized. And having that system in place really ensures the best and brightest do come to this country. And if you close off birthright citizenship, if you close off family reunification, people just aren't going to come. I mean, you know, there's this talk of a merit-based immigration system, but that sort of ignores the fact that people have ties to relatives. Or say, like my grandmother came. She, you know, only had a high school education, but she helped raise us while my parents, who are engineer scientists, helped make great contributions to this country. And so it's not so black and white. And you know, families are really what make this country so special.
My guest today is Vanessa Hua. She's columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle and the author of the new novel, A River of Stars. It's published by Ballantine Books. Now, what was interesting, as the book goes along, Scarlett escapes the maternity center. She moves to San Francisco. Once it became apparent that Scarlett has moved, Boss Jung follows, because I assume he's thinking my son, because he still thinks Scarlett is carrying his son. And he comes over. And what's interesting is I found that you decided not to make Boss Jung just this villainous character. You give him some sympathy. He's ailing. He has leukemia or cancer. He's got some of his own motivations.
Yeah, it's interesting because I was like, some people have been telling me that like even the antagonist, the villain, so to speak, at the start, Boss Jung and Mama Fang, who owns the maternity center, you begin to understand they each have their time in a chapter that kind of focuses on them and their histories. And I think that's, you know, a reflection of my overall project as a writer, in that we can begin to understand people in their complexities and their capacity for change. Because just as Scarlett evolves over the course of the novel and has her journey to make, so does Boss Jung. And so that's what makes, you know, he comes to understand himself and Scarlett and his views, and like to rethink, you know, who he is and his decisions. And I think that's important for me, that people do have this capacity to change and to understand, you know, that people are not fixed and, you know, with only one personality or, you know, one set of traits over time.
One of the things that's interesting about your writing is a lot of it, at least your creative writing, is focused on this idea of immigration, of the diaspora. What are the particular issues you want to share about this with your readers?
And I think it's interesting, this country, its origin myth is that we're a nation of immigrants, right? And, you know, starting with the pilgrims. And yet, the issue is not history. It's not, you know, just something for the history books. It's continually renewed and complicated. And just, you know, I'm has it all. It's like the hero's journey, the classic hero's journey. There's twists and turns, you know, there's reversals of fortune, there's sacrifice, you know, there's what does it mean for, you know, to leave behind friends and family, language and culture, to build a new life here, and what does it mean for the children and your descendants to sort of forge a life here, you know, assimilation, acculturation. being an insider, outsider. And I mean, I think in some ways, though, these stories are universal. I've had people tell me, like, well, I'm not Chinese, a mother or a woman, but yet I, you know, I feel like I could, your story resonates with me. So it's, I mean, I think that's maybe my overall project, that, like, yeah, these are, we can find ways to relate to each other. And, you know, these stories can be compelling. You know, what are all the ways that we can cross the lines that we've drawn in our lives? And I think books are a wonderful way to do that.
I'm struck by something you were saying. You said, you know, this is an ever-renewing story of how we're a nation of immigrants, and each generation is renewing this story. And yet, our society finds ourselves at a crossroads where you have at least a significant segment of society saying, yeah, this is enough.
Yeah.
I mean, what's your reaction to that?
I mean, it just, immigrants and the children of immigrants, and I'm in that category, right?
Most of us are.
Under attack in this country. And I mean, I just think it's so interesting. At the same time, you know, there's this, always this turn to, like, turn immigrants into scapegoats. I mean, this has been happening to the Chinese ever since, like, 1882, when they passed immigration laws banning Chinese from coming to this country for, you know, decades. And I think, and yet there's a focus and blame on the poorest, although, you know, not everyone who is an immigrant is poor, but there's this focus and blame on you know, this xenophobic turn of events when people are scared and worried about their futures. Yet why not, you know, why isn't there this concern about the 1% become, you know, holding, like, so much of the wealth in this country? And, like, because there is that hope, like, oh, someday I can be like them. I'd rather just kind of look down on immigrants and forget my own family history. I mean, economists have said there's a net gain when there's robust immigration to a country. It's, you know, countries that do not have immigration, that do not benefit from the ideas and the energy from around the world that, behind, and I think this is, you know, what our countries should continue to sort of, like, preserve and, you know, fix the immigration system, but, you know, it's not going to be an easy fix. Certainly have rules in place, but, you know, that are enforced, but, you know, you can't just slam the door. It's not the reality of how we live. We are not in a world where we just, you know, have to turn our backs on everything.
The name of the book is A River of Stars. Vanessa Hua, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks so much.
Vanessa Hua is a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle and the author of her first novel, A River of Stars. It's published by Ballantine. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.